Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Hello and welcome. Today we're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating novel, Silvia Moreno Garcia's Velvet Was the Night. Now, she's an author many of you might know for her ability to just glide between genres, fantasy, horror.
Yeah, she's incredibly versatile.
Exactly. But here she gives us something, well, quite different. It's this historical noir, a really gritty political thriller, but, and this is key, it's wrapped around the inner lives of people who are usually just overlooked. Okay, let's unpack this.
And you really can't talk about this book without immediately talking about the setting. We're in Mexico City, 1971, and this isn't just wallpaper, you know.
It's not at all.
It's the height of the Mexican Dirty War. The government was actively using these paramilitary groups to crush student dissent. It created this atmosphere of, well, intense paranoia, just constant fear.
Right, and the threat of state-sponsored violence, specifically mentioning groups like the Hawks, Los Halcones.
Yes, Los Halcones. They're central. That threat is like the air everyone's breathing in the story.
It's such a potent backdrop for noir. That kind of deep cynicism feels right at home there. But what's brilliant, I think, is how the plot doesn't really focus on the big players, the politicians or generals.
No, it's about the people caught in the middle, the collateral damage, really.
Precisely. So our story revolves around two incredibly lonely people. There's Mete, who's this rather timid legal secretary. And then there's Elvis, a conflicted enforcer working for the Hawks.
An unlikely pair. Very. And they get tangled together because of the disappearance of an activist, a woman named Leonora, and crucially, a roll of incriminating photos she was holding on to. So the question we really need to explore today for you listening is this. In a world filled with these huge ideologies and state violence, can ordinary, kind of forgotten people actually manage to shape their own destiny? That idea of being forgotten, of invisibility, is so central. Moreno Garcia, she's just masterful at using genre fiction noir, in this case as a sharp lens to look at history, especially focusing on Latin American experiences that often get sidelined, you know?
What's fascinating here is how she employs that classic noir slow burn. It's not just about the plot unfolding, it's about revealing the deep interior lives of these characters. Their isolation defines them almost.
Oh, absolutely. Let's take Mete first. Mete de la Torre. She's the picture of quiet melancholy. Mm-hmm. Her life is so routine, so predictable, and frankly dull, that the book says she feels as forgettable as a crack in the pavement.
Wow, that's a powerful image.
Isn't it? Her only real escape, her solace, comes from reading secret romance comics and listening to her beloved vinyl records. She's fundamentally passive, really just waiting for the next issue, the next song. And this quiet, predictable life gets completely shattered by the inciting incident. Her neighbor, Leonora, who is like everything Mate isn't.
Yeah.
Glamorous, confident, politically involved, maybe a little dangerous. The total opposite.
Leonora asks Mate to look after her cat, Pero. Simple favor. But then, poof, Leonora vanishes, just disappears, leaving Mate literally holding the cat.
Holding the bag.
And suddenly she's thrown into a world that's way, way more dangerous than any of her romance comics.
Yeah, and on the other side of this whole mess, you have Elvis. Well, his real name is Jorge, but he calls himself Elvis, which, I mean, that tells you so much right there about his internal conflict, doesn't it?
It really does.
He's basically a thug, an enforcer for the Hawks. He works for this shadowy guy called El Mago. But underneath that tough exterior, there's this whole hidden inner life. He's obsessed with American rock and roll, collects records religiously.
So not exactly the typical henchman profile.
Not at all. He joined Los Halcones purely out of, well, economic desperation. It wasn't about belief or ideology. And he actually seems to hate the violence he has to commit. There's a real self-loathing there.
It's such a smart move, humanizing the henchman like that. It stops him from just being a flat villain.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonora, the missing woman, she really acts as the classic pivot point, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's the MacGuffin, absolutely. Hitchcock would approve.
Right. Everyone's chasing what she represents, or rather, what she has, that vital role of film. Her actual story becomes almost secondary to the hunt for the evidence she left behind. Her absence is what jolts Mate and Elvis out of their separate kinds of stagnation.
She lights the match, basically. Ignites both their stories.
And the way Moreno Garcia structures this hunt is just fantastic. We get these alternating chapters switching between Mate's perspective and Elvis's, always third person limited.
Mm-hmm. You're right inside their heads, but only one at a time.
Exactly. And that creates this incredible dramatic irony, because we, the readers, are the only ones who see how close these two isolated souls are getting, how their paths are converging. They're on this collision course they don't even know about.
So Mayday, she starts her own little investigation, driven by maybe a sense of duty about the cat, and maybe just curiosity. Persistence.
A little bit of everything, probably.
She finds some radical political pamphlets hidden in Leonora's apartment and a business card for a photographer. It's her first real glimpse into Leonora's other life, the fact that she wasn't just glamorous, she was a committed activist. And she had enemies. Serious ones. Meanwhile, Elvis gets his orders from his boss, El Mago. Simple enough. Find that roll of film. But the stakes are unexpectedly huge. These photos, they apparently show some kind of secret party.
Yeah, not just any party.
No. High-ranking Mexican officials mingling with student activists, evidence of collusion, dissent, incredibly damaging stuff. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
It turns out which just explodes the scale, doesn't it? Suddenly, this local political mess has Cold War implications. It shows how that repression in Mexico City wasn't just an internal affair. It had, like, international value.
Absolutely. But amidst all this global intrigue, the connection that develops, or almost develops, between Mate and Elvis feels intensely personal.
Yeah.
Very quiet.
Yeah, they keep crossing paths without meeting, visiting the same places, the university campus, the photographer's studio, these little underground presses.
Yeah.
Always just missing each other.
And Elvis starts watching Mate. He sees her from afar. And he recognizes something in her, doesn't he?
He does. He sees that same profound loneliness, that feeling of being an extra in someone else's movie, that he feels himself. It's this unspoken kinship, not romantic at all, but based on this shared sense of detachment.
Isolation.
Isolation, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bond forged in shared invisibility, almost. They're both people who feel like life just sort of happened to them. Mate stuck in her routine, Elvis trapped by his circumstances. And the danger they both stumble into is, ironically, maybe the first thing that makes them feel real, validated.
And that danger is precisely what starts to change Mate. When she realizes people are following her, searching her apartment, she doesn't just shrink back into her shell.
No, surprisingly, she doesn't.
That passivity starts to crack. The fear awakens something in her, this cunning, this resilience she never knew she possessed. She starts shedding that timid secretary persona and begins thinking like someone in a noir novel, a survivor.
She almost weaponizes her own inconspicuousness, uses it as a cover.
Exactly. But all this simmering tension, this cat and mouse game, it's all building towards this massive, violent historical event that grounds the entire fictional plot. And this raises an important question. How do you maintain any sense of morality or find the strength to break free when you're complicit in systemic violence, especially when you witness its ugliest face?
And that ugly face is revealed on June 10th, 1971, the Corpus Christi massacre. Historically, it's known as El Halconazo, the Hawk Strike.
Right.
Elvis and his fellow Hawks, they're sent in to violently break up a peaceful student demonstration. And he's not just there, he's part of it. He witnesses this absolutely horrific, chaotic slaughter firsthand. Seeing that raw savagery, the true nature of the system he's serving, it just shatters whatever fragile loyalty he had left.
That's his breaking point.
Absolutely. It's his moral awakening, if you can call it that. It forces him to make a choice right then and there between just surviving within the system or getting out, consequences be damned.
And for Mate, who's nearby during the chaos, that abstract political threat she'd been circling suddenly becomes terrifyingly real, tangible. It's the moment the comic book world evaporates completely, replaced by brutal noir reality.
Yeah, the fantasy is over. And right after this, in the thick of it all, Mate has this moment of brilliant deduction about the missing film. It's almost cinematic.
How does she figure it out?
She remembers this casual chat she had with Leonora about some romantic movie they both liked. And connecting that memory somehow leads her to realize the film must be hidden inside one of her own precious vinyl records.
No way. So the very symbol of her escapism
becomes the key. Yeah, her escape route literally holds the dangerous truth she needs to maybe save herself.
Okay, so she finds the film. But what happens next is where Moreno Garcia really flips the script on the typical noir ending. May doesn't suddenly become a crusading hero, right? She doesn't hand the film over to the activists or try to expose the truth for justice's sake.
No, she doesn't. And that's maybe the most startling part. She recognizes the film for what it truly is in that world at that time. Power. Pure leverage. And she uses it with this incredibly cynical but maybe pragmatic effectiveness What does she do?
She blackmails a powerful political figure who's implicated in those photos, secures a big chunk of money, and crucially, a new identity, a way to disappear completely.
Wow. So no justice for Leonora or the students. She just takes the money and runs. That feels harsh.
It does feel harsh, maybe even cold. But I think the novel is making a really stark point about the reality of 1971 Mexico City. In a system that corrupts, maybe individual survival is the only achievable form of justice. Madel learns the hard way that the gritty happy ending isn't about solving the crime. It's about becoming the protagonist of your own survival story, even if it's a morally gray one.
Okay, I can see that. It's realistic, if bleak. And what about Elvis? Does he get any kind of redemption?
He does, but it's quiet. Very much in character. He's gone completely rogue by this point. He figures out Maid is in danger because she has the film, or because people think she does.
Right, the people she blackmailed or others.
Exactly. Agents are sent after her. And Elvis, acting totally alone, covertly protects her. He shadows her, intervenes silently, ensures she gets away safely. It's this unseen act of conscience. He can't save the world. He can't change the system. But he chooses to save this one person he feels this strange kinship with.
A silent guardian kind of thing.
Precisely. And they have one last encounter. They cross paths at a bus station. Just as Maid is about to disappear, they just exchange this look. A silent acknowledgement.
Of everything they've both been through.
Yeah, mutual recognition between two survivors who saw their own loneliness reflected in the other. And then they just go their separate ways.
Yeah.
Two people forever marked by what happened, vanishing back into the anonymity they came from, but changed.
That wordless goodbye. It feels melancholy, but also, yeah, probably the only realistic way their paths could finally diverge.
So when we step back and look at the big themes, the novel hits hard on political apathy and the impossibility of it, really. Maid starts out thinking politics is something that happens to other people far away.
Politics, it seemed, would not leave her alone, as the book says.
Exactly. Her story hammers home the point that in a repressive state, nobody gets to stay on the sidelines forever. Eventually, it comes for you.
And the symbols track that journey so well. Maid's secret romance comics, they represent that initial naivete, her belief in simple, neat endings. But Elvis's vinyl records, they're more complex. They symbolize his inner life, his soul, really, his longing for the freedom he hears in that American rock and roll.
And ironically, those very tools of escapism, the comics helping her remember, the record hiding the film, become the catalysts for action.
Yeah, they facilitate their break from the roles society or circumstance had assigned them.
Which brings us to how the novel subverts the noir genre itself. There's no femme fatale in the traditional sense, no real romance plot between the leads.
No, the connection is much stranger, more profound than that.
It's all about self-reinvention under extreme pressure. Maid sheds that timid skin, becomes cunning. Elvis rejects the thug identity, finds his conscience. The book really insists that identity isn't fixed. It's something you actively shape through the moral choices you make when the stakes are highest.
It leaves you with this feeling of melancholy realism, I suppose. A powerful reminder that huge historical events are ultimately experienced by ordinary people just trying to live their lives, often on the fringes, caught in these massive impersonal gears.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? I think the novel fundamentally shifts your perspective. It makes you notice the quiet rebellions, the small acts of self-preservation by people who are normally invisible. It's this powerful validation of finding agency, finding your own path, even when the world seems set against you. And it leaves you with that final, really provocative thought the novel offers. Quote, the truth was like a photograph. It could be developed in different ways, depending on who was in the dark room.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes you question who gets to control the narrative of history itself. Did Mossy, by selling the film for her own escape, just become another kind of manipulator in her own dark room?
It's a chilling question.
Ultimately, I think the novel's real power, its legacy, is using that familiar noir framework to tell a deeply human story. It's about loneliness, yes, but also about the unexpected, quiet courage of ordinary people trapped by history.
A story that resonates because it feels so real, despite the thrilling plot.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Yekatra Foundation.